listening to Walnut Grovecast. My name is Mark. Tonight we have a very special guest. She is somebody who played a character on Little House on the Prairie, a show that most of you probably have heard of. She played the character Carrie with her sister Sydney. We have Rachel Lindsay Greenbush on the telephone tonight. How are you, Lindsay? I'm going to call you Rachel. I'm just going to stick to Rachel, if that's okay.
Thank you, Mark. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, 100%. It's awesome that you are here, and it's an open door policy with Walnut Grovecast. You're always welcome back, and anybody else who wants to come on is more than welcome.
Oh, thank you.
So I guess first and foremost, you and I were talking just a little bit about how your billing was in the opening credits, and how that made a few little blips when you're starting an acting career after Little House on the Prairie, because a lot of people tend to think that your full name was Rachel Sydney Greenbush, when in fact it's Rachel Lindsay Greenbush, and Sydney's a whole different person who just happens to look exactly like you.
That's correct. A lot of people still don't know that we're twins. They think that Lindsay Sydney Greenbush is one person. And my legal first name is Rachel. And so all my friends and family call me Rachel. And on the show, my mom decided to go by Lindsay, which is my middle name, in Sydney, which is actually my sister's legal first name. Mm-hmm. But everybody called us Rachel and Robin on the set, off the set, in school. So when they did the billing on Little House on the Prairie credits, I'm not sure if they intended it for it to look that way or if there was a typo in there, but the way it reads is like that it's one person. So there's a lot of people that still don't know that Carrie Ingalls was shared by twins. Oh. We shared the role of Carrie. So, but as I got older and I was doing more acting, I wanted to go by my legal first name. So that's where the Rachel Lindsay comes in. But people that would try and explain which twin was which, a lot of times in public would say, well, that's Rachel Lindsay and not Sydney Robin.
You know,
so it's kind of like this crisscross of names.
I think the twin thing is confusing all on its own. Two of my closest friends are twins. And and identical twins, like you and your sister, like super identical. And it's one of those things where that's confusing enough, but then you mix in all these weird, the different names. It just, it's painful.
Yeah, and it doesn't help
cute.
That a lot of times that they choose rhyming names for twins, right?
Right, exactly. I was going to ask, are you still close with your sister, Sydney?
I am. She lives out by my parents out in Malibu. We grew up in Malibu. We lived on the north side of Malibu, past county line. We moved there from Hollywood when I was 2. Mm-hmm. And then when I was 7, we moved into the town of Malibu. It wasn't a city yet. It was very country. Mm-hmm. We used to ride horses and stuff all over the beach and stuff like that. So it was a very different upbringing than being on the show. So I really kind of had a ranch and an earthy life, and then I had the show life as well. So it kind of grounded me really well. But she still lives close to my mom and dad out there.
Ah, so you you do follow kind of an equestrian lifestyle, right? You have do you have one horse or more than one horse?
We have 2 horses now. We used to have 3. We have 2 horses now. I actually have my sister's old professional barrel racing horse that she did pro rodeo on, and she also won best all around cow horse at the Cow Palace. And I always loved her when my sister got her, and then when she got a little bit older, I told her, I go, Robin, why don't you just retire her to me, and I'll make her a trail horse, and you'll never have to worry because she'll always know that she's in good hands. Mm-hmm. And so my sister did, and so I have her old professional horse. We grew up riding Gymkhana, which is barrel racing, and 11 other timed events on horseback.
Wow.
And so we grew up doing that. That's a Western sport. And then when I was about 12 or 13, I really wanted to do show jumping, and I got into show jumping, and that's really my true love. I've done both sports. I've worked as a groom before and helped trainers saddle the horses and get them ready for their clients and train them during the week. And show jumping is really my true love. My mom, when the Olympics were here in L.A., bought tickets. The show jumping was actually sold out, but she took me to see the dressage, and it's just a memory I will never forget. They were just so beautiful. And dressage, if you don't know what dressage is, it's kind of like ballet on horseback. It's just truly beautiful, and the horses of that caliber are just amazing.
I think I've seen that. I'm not in person, but I think I know what you're talking about, and it's one of those things where it's just such a lovely coordinated effort from the horses.
Exactly. And the rider and the horse have to work as one and be totally in sync with each other, because you're never really supposed to see the rider give the horse a command, but yet they do. And so when the rider is just super quiet, it really just looks like the horse is doing everything, but they're really not. But that's the beauty of it, right?
Yeah.
Is that you don't see what they're asking them to do.
I think it's such an interesting, it's more than a hobby. I think when you have horses, it's more of a lifestyle, but, that's so wild. I mean, that's not easy either. What you're doing it's a lot of physical, activities when you're on the horse and leaping over these, I don't even know what you call them. What do you call them?
They're called jumps or fences. Okay. Yeah, because you have different combinations. You have all different combinations. You have what's called as an in and out, right? So you can have two jumps, and it's you jump in and you have so many steps and you jump out. And then you can have your oxer, which is kind of multiple pulls that you jump that really makes the horse round over it. You get that nice big round jump. But when you start getting higher in height of the jumps, sometimes the horses, they need a little bit more pace depending on the height of the horse and the stride of the horse. So you have some horses that want to really take you to the fence, so you have to kind of hold them off. And it's a lot of cardio, a lot of leg work. Whereas barrel racing is not as strenuous, at least in my opinion, as show jumping is, because show jumping, you always want to bring the horse back and gather them on their hind. So when you get to the fence, they can get those back feet underneath them, elevate their front end, and spring off like a jumping boy off a platform and jump over that fence. And the fence is, they go 6 feet high and a little bit taller. The one thing I never did get to master was the water pool, where you just jump long over the water. I never quite mastered that one. But anyway, it's an adrenaline. It's a lot of adrenaline too, because if you have a clean round, in Grand Prix, when you jump clean and you get into the jump offs, the jump offs are timed. So you're thinking about, how can I cut this corner? How can I roll back? How can I line up on this one? How can I jump this jump at an angle that sets me up better for this one, so I just have a straight line and it costs me less time? So there ends up becoming a lot in the calculations of the riding, but it's much more of an adrenaline rush, at least for me, than barrel racing or gymkhana ever was.
Yeah, I mean, it just sounds like one of these things, I've ridden horses, but and I've had a horse go slightly out of control while I was on the horse. But no, and that's scary, because I think when a horse starts running and you really feel the power of this horse, and you don't know what to do, which is the case for what I was in. I would imagine that it would be scary, but at the same time, when you have a good relationship, like it sounds like you do with your horse, and you both are on the same team, and you're, literally trying to do the same thing, it has to be really, really, just a really spiritual kind of connection. That's really amazing, I think.
It really is, because you really are riding as one, right? Mm-hmm. You're just so in that moment, and that moment is just happening, and you're really just like, without words, communicating to each other and riding as a team. And you couldn't do it without the horse. The horse looks to you for support, and so to get him to the right spot. And it really is. It's very spiritual, especially when you have a horse that you've really formed a close relationship with. It becomes very intuitive.
Have you ever taken a break from horse riding, or has this just been a constant thing of your life?
Yeah, there's been times when I've taken breaks from horseback riding. There was a time when my daughter was young that I put my horse, my old horse Shawnee, out on pasture at my sister's house because I just couldn't ride her every day. And she was really fun. She was double bred out of Native Dancer, and she had all the quarter horse racers on the bottom at a bow, at a Leo. And then she had a Razor Glass, Razor Native, and out at Easy Jet. And the Easy Jet horses are known for being good barrel racing horses, mm-hmm. but she was actually a way better show jumper than she ever would have made out of a barrel racing horse. So I got very fortunate there. But yeah, there's definitely been breaks when I didn't ride as much because I had other things going on.
Mm-hmm. Because you were on the cast, on the set of Little House and the cast, of course, did they have a lot of horses that were just always there? I mean, you always see horses in different scenes, but I don't know if I've ever tried to pick out how many individual horses were a part of the show.
Yeah, they would have several teams of horses to pull the wagons all the time. Mm-hmm. And the wrangler, Jack Lilly, he believed that every kid should own a horse. And so he would let us sit on the horses and ride the horses. But he actually gave us our very first pony.
Oh, that's awesome. And
his name was Peanuts. And he talked my mom into this little pony saying, I got the best little pony for you. I look back at it now, and this little pony was so honored, this little Shetland. Jack probably couldn't sell him, or he probably sold him and got him returned a couple times. No other horse in my lifetime ever threw me off as many times as that pony did. But we were out at Chapel Canyon, and he asked my mom if she was interested in the pony, and so he brought her out there to Chapel Canyon, Big Sky Ranch, where we were filming, and my mom was leading us around on the pony, and she's like, well, he seems very nice and very sweet, and my mom's not a horse person at all. And so we ended up, my mom was like, well, how am I going to get this horse home, Jack? I don't have a horse trailer. And so he goes, well, you know, at the end of the day, he goes, you bring your car over here, and you open both the doors. And my mom was like, well,
no way.
Okay. So they took this little Shetland pony and walked it in the back of my mom's Peugeot wagon and shut both the doors. And we drove it home all the way from Simi Valley.
That's
like a
incredible.
St. Bernard dog in the back of my mom's Peugeot wagon until
Holy
we got to the ranch up Deer Creek.
That's, I've never heard of that. Oh my God. That poor pony.
He fit just fine because he was like the size of a large dog. So he fit just fine. And he had his head sticking out the window. And it was so funny because I've never seen that ever happen again. And then like maybe a month ago, we passed a car on the freeway and it had a little miniature pony in it. I was like, see, my family's not the only one.
That's insane. That's really funny. That's when you know the guy really wanted to get rid of the pony.
Yeah, right.
Like, what kind of car do you have? I have a VW Beetle. Oh, it'll fit. It'll fit fine.
Yeah, no problem. It'll fit.
Put down the seats.
We'll
it'll be
it
totally
fit.
Cool. Also, growing up on the set, you must have had like a lot of free time, I would imagine. I could be totally wrong, but did you what type of I guess I don't even know where to go with this. I would imagine you're trying to entertain yourself as, you know, a young child on the set. There couldn't have been too many people, you know, who were little like you and your sister. What would you guys do to pass time?
Well, when we were really little is when I had more free time because we weren't in school. As we got older, we were required to go to school on set. But when I was really little, they ended up setting up a trailer with, like, books and puzzles and stuff like that so that when we weren't working, we could have stuff to, like, occupy us. And my mom used to, like, bring little hoops and fabric, and she would draw whatever animals. My mom's very artistic on the little fabric, and she would put it in the little hoops and then give us a needle and thread and let us, like, learn how to chain stitch and satin stitch and do those kind of things. And then, you know, Melissa Gilbert used to always come and play with us and read us books and do puzzles with us until she had to go back on the set or back to school again. And so did Allison. So we had the older kids would come play with us. And then as we got older, there was children in the schoolyard that were more our age. So mm-hmm. after, if we weren't needed on the set, but we still were filming and we were done with school and we were still filming, we would sit underneath the tree sometimes and play backgammon. Mrs. Fife, who was our teacher on the set, taught us how to play. I'll play backgammon. So we'd sit and play games of backgammon and stuff like that. And as long as we weren't making noise if we were close to the set, because once they start shooting, it's not like it is today. Like now today you can digitally remove a sound from the film.
Yeah, back then,
if an airplane flew overhead, everything stopped. And then as soon as the airplane left, they go, okay, keep rolling, let's go, start it from the top, and you start the scene all over again.
It's like, yeah, jet passing in 1863 or something. It's not really
copacetic to the timepiece.
Yeah, one of the things I think a lot of people have read about and they hear about from other cast members, and I'd like to know your take on it, is that the people on the set really were kind of a family. And it's one of these things that Alison Arngrim was on the show, and she was saying that she was very close with a number of people, including, and I'm forgetting his real name, the guy who played Percival.
Steve Tracy.
Yes, yes.
Yeah,
and she was very close with him off set. And, you know, did you have that same type of... A lot of people also credit Michael Landon for that, because he felt as though it was very important that the children are treated a certain way.
I think you share a common bond, right? Because sure. you're all in the trenches working hard together to turn out the best product that you can. You're bonded by this special moment or this special show in our case, mm-hmm. you know, that has touched so many people. And you're working side by side. So I saw the people on the set and the kids on the set more than I saw the kids in school. So you really end up when you're, and then I was on the show for 8 years.
Yeah, you grew up there, essentially. You really did grow up there.
I grew up there. And for like Allison and Melissa, they went through adolescence there, you know, mm-hmm. and into their teenage years. So when you're around people for that length of period of time, plus you're, you know, you're going to school together, you're working together, you really do become a family. And I think that's why all of us are so incredibly close to this day. I just saw Leslie Landon not too long ago. She's just a sweetheart. I keep in touch with Melissa. Allison and I do stuff. We go gallivanting together all the time. Mm-hmm. Anytime she'll have me along, I tag along and vice versa. I've got her into a couple fudges, but she's always up for it. She's always a good game. And I'm, we were just with Charlotte and Karen. I love Karen. She's still like a mother figure to me. So I was very fortunate in my life because I not only had a dad, but I had a pa, and I not only had a mom, but I had a ma. So I was very fortunate because I had four very strong role models in my life.
I mean, I think it shows on screen as well. And I have to wonder if that's why the show does have a certain level of longevity. I watched it when I was little. It was like, I think, like a lot of people I know, it was like on it every day at 5 o'clock on Channel 11. And I would just sit there watching Little House on the Prairie. It was, you know, these were the reruns. It was still on the air, but I was like just watching the old stuff. And I don't know. It was also a secret because being a boy, you can't really watch Little House. It was a girl's show when I was growing up. I'm sure you're well aware of that now, is that it was considered a girl's show, but there's a lot of guys who watch it. I'm a heterosexual male. I have a son and a wife. And, you know, and whenever I say I have a podcast about Little House on the Prairie, people just kind of give me a little bit of a look, but, and that's okay. It really was a secret. And as I grew up, a lot of my friends are like, oh yeah, I know Little House on the Prairie. You know, I watched every episode. And it's, I think a lot of guys love the show and they just wouldn't admit it. But there is a certain level of longevity to the show. I think that it's still, it's unique and it carries a certain, it was created at a kind of a weird time, and you could never create a show like this again. It doesn't seem like you can really create a show like that again.
No, and I don't think you ever could, not without Michael being involved. I mean, you could create somebody that could touch people in a similar way. It wouldn't be the same way. But, you know, Little House on the Prairie was really Michael's vision, and mm-hmm. he wanted to touch people and draw them in and make them feel like the Ingalls were part of their family and in their home every week. And he really did that, but he always had these teachings and these morals and right from wrong, and added a whole nother element to it. Plus, as far as we get into technology these days, the farther and farther and farther we get from the 1800s and the pioneers. So it continues to be, and especially with the books, a look back into American history and the way it was mm-hmm. and the way people lived and what their values were and what was important was community and family and love and friendship. You know, those are the days that your word was your bond. It was on a handshake. Sometimes you bartered for things. You said, well, I'll help you come plow your field if you'll help me repair this chair or whatever it was.
Right.
But it was very much more a sense of community. I think today we think of ourselves, especially with technology, much more as individuals and not as a collective whole, which is we really probably should get back to the collective whole.
I agree with you, and I just think that the product that was put out, it is such a beautiful product that when you do watch it, you really do kind of get into this this vibe that the show really is depicting a time from 150 years ago. And it's just really self like immersible. I guess I don't know.
You are, and look at the quality of actors that Michael had on that show. You know, mm-hmm. I think just about every great actor at that time came through the show at different times. We had Burl Ives and Johnny Crawford and Forrest from S Troop. I can't think of his name, but Forrest Tucker. And, you know, we had Patricia
Todd Bridges,
Neal,
who I see Todd that you Bridges. Interact with on Twitter.
Oh, yeah. Todd and I have been friends forever. Him and my mom were good friends. And so after the show ended, we would still run into Todd. You know, you would be going on a call and they'd be going on a call and you'd just say, well, let's stop at McDonald's and get lunch or whatever. And you would end up running into people that you know, because Hollywood was a small place at that time.
Sure.
So, we've been friends. Todd Bridges' mom and my mom was always into health food, and so was his mom. But I can remember his mom was the first one I ever heard talk about juice fasting.
Oh,
and
really?
And stuff like, yeah. And so Todd and I have been good friends for a long, long time. We just saw him in October. It was great to catch up with him. I hadn't seen him in years. But he's always been a good guy.
He seems to have a really good sense of humor. I don't know what he's up to right now, but I follow him on Twitter. Actually, I saw that you interacted with him, so I'm like, oh, I'm going to see what Todd Bridges is up to. And he seems to have a great sense of humor and everything. And
he does. I mean, he's really championed his demons and gotten over them. And I'm so happy
That's
for
awesome.
Him for all that he's been through. And he was working on a project in October. And then when we saw him, he just had us laughing in stitches the whole weekend. He is just naturally hilarious.
That's how
funny.
He seems, right? Like, he just kind of exudes kind of a certain personality that it's really kind of missing right now. So if he's looking for something like that, hopefully he finds, you know, that type of role and really kind of steps out again. Because I would just like to see him again, you know, doing what he wants to do.
He's a phenomenal actor, and the work he did on Little House on the Prairie is just a testament to what a great actor he was, even at a young age.
Yeah, he was a kid. What was he, 11 or something? He was very young.
Yeah, he was very young. I think he was younger than 11, actually. But
yeah, pretty. It was a pretty serious role, and you know, he definitely nailed it.
And nailed it and beyond. He just was phenomenal.
I was going to ask you before, and I don't know if you know, in the beginning when Carrie falls, do you know if that's you or your sister falling in the
It's
opening
my
credits?
sister.
Oh, it is. Okay. I wasn't sure.
What happened
She's a
was
klut. No, I'm kidding. You shoved her. No.
she yeah, I shoved her. I was in the weeds.
That'd be
Yeah,
awesome.
I'm like, it's just about me. It's all me. No. She ran down the hill first. She did it first, and then she fell. And I had seen her fall, and then she was like scared. And so they asked me to do it, and I was like, no, I was too scared to do it. And so they said, well, we just need a little bit more footage because we have some time we need to fill. So they go, okay, well, just run over the top of the hill. So what they did was they put me back at the top of the hill,
Yeah.
and they have my mom down lower, and they go, okay, just run to your mom. So I did. I just kind of ran over the top of the hill to my mom, which gives them that couple of seconds. So when Laura and Mary are running down the hill, and you see Laura and you see Mary, and then you see Carrie first, the first time you see her, that's me. So then it cuts away to
Oh.
Melissa, and it cuts away to Melissa Sue, and it goes back to Carrie, and she falls. That's my
So
sister.
you're both technically in the opening credits. So
We're
that's
both in the
interesting.
opening credits, but
Yeah.
she's the one that falls.
She's the klutz. No, that
Yeah.
it looked like a very steep hill. So I'm sure your mother was a nervous wreck when she fell.
It is a steep hill, and we took a friend up there, and he jokingly started running down the hill, and then he got too much speed, and he grabbed me at the bottom. I'm like, no, don't grab me. You're
That's
going
too
to take me
funny.
down with you.
So I have to imagine that throughout the late 70s and 80s, you were definitely somebody who people identified when you were just kind of walking around, and even now, I would say that you'd still be identifiable. What is like kind of your strangest fan interaction, and do people just kind of walk up to you and call you Carrie?
They usually call me Lindsay.
Okay.
It's always when you least expect it. It's always when you least expect to get recognized. When I was real little, we were at SeaWorld because me and my sister performed in a drill team, and we were going to march in the Disney, or not SeaWorld, we were at Disney, and we were going to march in the Disney parade.
Oh, that's
And
awesome.
so we had our hair all up in curlers to make our hair all curly. And my mom said, well, you can ride some of the rides because we didn't get to go to Disney that often. You can ride some of the rides, but you have to have your hair in these sponge curlers and we'll take it down before you march in the parade. And so we were like, okay. And so we were going around the park with curlers in our hair, and these girls recognized us, and they're like, can we get your autograph? We know who you are, and blah, blah, blah. And so that was one. And then I was at the deli the other day in the supermarket
Yeah.
buying food, and she's like, do you have a twin? I'm like, yeah. So it's always when you least expect it is when you get recognized.
It sounds like you haven't had any kind of bad experiences, which is good. I think that's really nice, and hopefully the Little House fans are always nice to you. Have you ever met any celebrities that you kind of become starstruck with, where it's kind of like you're taken a little bit back, and maybe then they might recognize you?
I definitely have people that I truly admire their work, and I tend to get really shy. I really tend to get shy, and I'm like, oh, I don't want to bother him. But my father worked with Dee Wallace. He did Critters with Dee Wallace, and Dee Wallace has done such a wonderful large body of work. I wanted to say hello to her and tell her, my father works with you, blah, blah, blah. And I was just so shy, and I ended up doing it, and I'm so grateful I did. But yeah, I don't know if it's necessarily starstruck or just that I admire them so much. I tend to like introvert and get really, really shy because I don't want to bother them.
That's interesting. So one thing that I was talking to Allison Arngrim about a long time ago is the lack of Little House on the Prairie merchandise that existed throughout the 70s. And I was wondering if you had any opinion on that. It seems like one thing I was saying is it seems like a perfect Atari 2600 game, you know, like a Little House on the Prairie, you know, a little wagon, you know what I mean? It seems like a perfect
raise the crotch.
Right. Like the dog, you know, like, you know, but you know, I'm just kind of curious, did anything ever get brought up? Like, you know, we're going to have Little House on the Prairie, you know, toys on the shelf this, you know, when for this Christmas. And I was just kind of curious why, you know, there's little stuff. I mean, there's dolls and there's, I think, a Colorforms thing, but nothing really major, but the show was extremely popular. And I'm just kind of curious, either your opinion or why that happened, or.
Well, the marketing was the show was the rights of the show ended up being owned by NBC and Ed Friendly Productions. But the marketing was owned by Ed Friendly Productions because he owned the rights to the books. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if Ed just didn't have the foresight to see how much really could be marketed. But then all that kind of marketing was really new, right? Like, I think Kiss really took that to a whole new level.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Having the action figures and stuff like that. So all that kind of marketing was still fairly new. We had, let's see, we have a tea set and we have a board game and we have a Halloween costume and there's color forms and lunch pails and...
yeah, I mean,
but I mean, it's all kind of little stuff, but it's very in step with what was being done at the time, because you don't really, for the other series like Happy Days and stuff like that, you don't find that much stuff for them either, really. Nothing was really in the early 70s marketed that big. I think it was really like Kiss and some of the other shows, Power Rangers, that like kind of started taking it to a whole new level.
You make a good point about that, because I was a really big Kiss fan, actually, throughout. I even followed them around when they took off the makeup. I was like one of those 15 people. And the, you know... There was a lot of stuff, but it really wasn't so much, even when you do look at what Kiss did release. And
by
Happy Days.
Standards, yeah.
Yeah, Happy Days, I think they had the same things that you just mentioned, like a lunchbox, a Halloween costume, and maybe a few other little things. Maybe underoos or something. You know, like you get a set of Paws underoos, like they're pink, you know. So... What is it like, I guess, so you're a mom, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how did that, I guess, looking back when you know, having your whole, like, childhood on television, for the most part, not your whole childhood, but, you know, you're basically at work for some formative years, when you had children, did you really want to kind of keep them away from that? Or maybe just kind of, you know, I'm going to be just a regular person, you know, like, because I know at some point you decided you didn't want to be a part of this, I guess, the humbug of Hollywood.
Well, it wasn't that I didn't want to be a part of the humbug of Hollywood. It's that I needed to find myself.
Mm-hmm.
I needed to find out who I was, because I started acting when I was 3. So by the time I hit 13, there's a thing in Hollywood where when you start becoming 13 and 14 years old, there get actors that are 18 and 20 that look 16, and they pay them to play 16 because they don't have to deal with the child labor laws, because you're an adult. They don't have to have a social worker on the set. You don't have to, they don't have to pay a guardian.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of perks to that. So there's an awkward age right in there where you don't work as much. I did continue to do stuff in high school, but it was really like, okay, I've done this for so long, but is this what I want to do with my life? Like, where am I going in life? And so I kind of just took a little break to go to college and figure it out and decide where I wanted to go.
Hmm.
Because I did really want to ride on the U.S. equestrian Olympic team and show jumping. That was really what I wanted to do. But that just didn't work out, but well, but I would have preferred to do that.
Well, I'm sure you were up against, like, you know, thousands of people who, you know, are fighting for that same, you know, spot. You know, that I would imagine that, you know, it's not for lack of trying. You know, it's just.
Yeah, no, you have to. There's a lot of competition, and you have to get to a very high level of accomplishment to even get considered or looked at for that. Yeah, and then the horses of that caliber that can actually go to the Olympics are, you know, very expensive, and so it takes a lot to get there. It's a lot of campaigning. It's a lot of getting to know people. Winning, you know, you have to go on that trail and prove that you're a great rider that can represent the United States. Sure. So it's a whole campaign. It's not an easy road.
So what do you think about right now? It seems as though Little House on the Prairie is really kind of big again over in France. Like, for instance, Alison Arngrim was saying how it's, you know, she just can't believe the outpouring of fans, of new, brand new fans, like a whole new generation of people discovering the show. And it's just kind of, it is kind of strange just because it's, you know, it's an American culture show. And
well, people, individual in Europe have always been fascinated with the American West.
Sure.
Always been fascinated with the American West. For those that didn't get to come out here and be immigrants and experience the wild, wild West, they would read about it in those tabloidal magazines that would embellish the truth a lot of the times. But they've always been fascinated with it. They have amusement parks over there dedicated to it. So I don't think it's new necessarily, but the thing that is really fascinating about Little House on the Prairie is because Laura Ingalls Wilder was a real person and the children's book were written about her real life and the way it was and some of the traditions and customs that they experienced at the time, you find families all over the world that not only want to watch it themselves, but want to watch it with their children because there's not a lot of TV programming on like that teaches morals and community and values of family and love and support. And so you have them, these families that are actually passing it down to their children like an heirloom because we really don't have anything on TV that is close to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you think the quality of the show of how it was put together, you know, our dresses were so authentic. We had aprons and petticoats and bonnets and bloomers and stockings and boots. And then, you know, you put the sound score with that, you know, every time Mr. Edwards walks in the room, you would hear his character music before he even came on screen, which is what they started doing like with cartoons and Bugs Bunny and stuff like that. So it like set the mood, you know. So the way that the whole thing was packaged and put together for its time was really before its time.
Yeah, I mean,
and
the
I think
accuracy
that's why it's lasting the test of time.
The accuracy is really phenomenal. It's I do a lot of I guess outdoor cooking a little bit, you know, with the Cub Scouts and the Boy Scouts. And I'm like looking in the mercantile and they have all of this like crazy cast iron stuff. That's totally period correct. Everything, all the cans, everything, it's all period correct. And, very rarely will something kind of pop up where it's like, hey, that wasn't created until 5 years later, but it just seems like they put a lot of genuine thought and love into these sets, and I don't know, and the costumes
they really did, and it's really neat to see when you read the books or you've read the books. Of course, not everything is 100% accurate, but a lot of the things that Michael took from the books and put them in the show is really incredible. You know, Pa in Laura Ingalls Wilder's books calls Laura Half Pint. That comes from the books. So there's lots of little things like that Michael put in the show that really make it an incredible show,
so,
you know, and very close to the books, not totally for all of you very historical Little House on the Prairie fans, but he did put a lot of characteristics from the books in there.
Yeah, there seems to be, I mean, it's chock full of little tiny details, which I think is just another reason why this show has such longevity. Now, when you found out that certain shows were going to be, I guess, Carrie-based, you know, or you were going to be the pain in the butt, you know, like kind of like a Meet Me in the Fair where you're in the hot air balloon, you know. What did you get, like, overwhelmed with that? I mean, it must have been like such a big deal because, you know, you're a kid, basically, and every episode is about the adult, really. But especially with like the God Sister, where you and your sister get to play lead roles at the same time. You know, it must have been kind of exciting to approach these, you know, more Carrie-centric episodes. Also, Little Girl Lost,
it was very exciting to approach this kind of things. It was not overwhelming because there was always two of us, except for, you know, the God Sister, but most of the time there was two of us to trade off. But also when you're filming scenes, you're not filming all your scenes in one day.
Right.
You know, you film them by location, so they're shot out of sequence. So it doesn't always seem totally overwhelming. You know, I can say that for my part, but, you know, for Melissa, because she carried more of the weight of the show, there probably were days where it might have been a little bit overwhelming for her because she had to go to school on top of it. But for us, it wasn't that way necessarily so. But it was nice that they did do some stuff that was more Carrie involved. And I can remember them tying the butterfly to my button when I fell in the well. They actually had it tied to my dress with a piece of fishing line.
Do you ever watch the episodes? Like, do you ever just kind of just throw on an episode and just kind of relive that experience? Or are these difficult to watch?
I do, and it usually brings back... No, it usually brings back a lot of behind-the-scenes memories of things we were doing off-camera or off-set. And I don't usually put it, like, in the DVD player, but if I'm flipping channels... And we come across it, we're like, oh, which one's this? And then we'll usually, I haven't seen this one in a while, and we'll usually watch it. Or, you know, I'll be flipping channels, and I'm like, I know that voice, and then it'll end up usually being Michael. But we'll stop and watch it, because they are really just ahead of their time.
Yeah, they're very watchable, I find. But, of course, I'm a fan of the show, so, and you are too, though, it sounds like. It's not just that you're on the show, but it sounds as though the show itself that, you know, you enjoy.
Oh, absolutely, especially the very first couple years, like some of the storylines like Maude Holliday and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. They're just so genuine and so cute. Mm-hmm. That you can't help but get sucked into them.
So what's going on now for you? Like, what... What do you work on, and have you written anything about your experiences on Little House? And I'm just kind of curious if that's something that might be in your future.
I haven't written anything yet. It is something that I do plan on doing in the future. Right now, I've been working on my candle line. I have a line of candles called Carrie's Candles. I have about 8 different scents. They're all soy. Excuse me.
That's fine.
And with lead-free wicks, I've been working on those.
Do you have a website for that, by the way?
I don't. I'm building it right now as we speak. I'm putting it all together. But you can always contact me through Facebook, direct message if you would like to purchase one, and I'll tell you how to do it. And then I travel around to the different shows, and then I actually have a movie that's in pre-production that I've been cast in. It's called A Short Stop Away. It's about a young boy who lost his father to cancer, and he dreams of playing shortstop like his father. So, and he gets to go through some bullying and stuff in school, and so I get to be his school teacher. It's my turn to be school teacher this time. So,
finally, Carrie gets to be the teacher.
Well, yeah, because, you know, actually all the Ingalls girls taught it at one time or another, and so did Ma, so it's my turn.
Well, yeah, that's really funny, actually. So do you think that this might be your entering back into the world of acting, maybe?
Well, I've actually did the Vagina Monologues twice and been on stage. A friend of mine was speaking to me about doing some theater work, and I would really love to do that because my father started in theater and then he went to feature film and then he did television as well. So I'd really like to do some theater. Mm-hmm. I haven't yet. It's the one, well, I really haven't done, well, no, no, I really haven't done a feature film either. So, but it's close, more close to, you know, doing a television series, as far as the camera setup and angles and faraway shots and stuff like that. So I really would like to do some theater work because mm-hmm. it's all live. I've done stuff like the Vagina Monologues where you do get up and you perform in front of people, but it's a little different than, actually doing a whole show. So that would be something I would wow. be really, interested in doing.
I was going to say, it's in your family, really. Your father, Billy Bush, is pretty an extensive filmography. He's been in a bunch of really great TV shows and like a lot of really big TV shows. And also, you mentioned earlier Critters, which is a personal favorite of mine from the 80s. But also The Hitcher, which was also from the same year. So.
Yep, The Hitcher with Tom and Rutger Howard. Yeah, he did that. I mean, he's done a lot of feature films going back to, you know, he did Five Easy Pieces with Jack Nicholson. He played yeah. Jack Nicholson's best friend. And he did Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore. He played Alice's first husband that dies in the Coca-Cola crash. And he did The River with Mel Gibson and Sissy Spacek and 40 Curates with Gene Kelly and Monty Walsh. He was in mm-hmm. with Lee Marvin, and then he did Tom Horn with Steve McQueen. So and he did The Organization with Raul Julia and Sidney Poitier. So he's done my dad's done a large body of work. I'm really
you have to carry that legacy of being an actor in your family. But you've certainly you know, just being on Little House for all of the episodes that you did. I mean, between you and your sister, you did, I think, most of the episodes, right? I mean, this is a tremendous body of work.
Most of the episodes, a little fewer in the last season, and then the very, very last season. My last season, I was in some of them and not in some of them. And then the very, very last season, season 9, we weren't in that season at all. So, but yeah, it was a lot of episodes, a lot of time, because, you know, you really shoot them within, you know, 8 to 10 days. You have to film them and cut them and have them ready to go on the air. So it's a really short period of time, the turnaround to be able to do a television show. So you're working day in and day out.
Also, if I could just go back to the soy candle, I remember you have a lemon verbena flavor or scent. And that's one, I don't know why I keep putting it off, but yeah, I definitely want to order that one. Is another one I want to order, but they look cool. And just the fact that, well, I think the fact that it's coming from a Little House in the Prairie person, but also it's, you know, lemon verbena being the perfume of choice on Little House in the Prairie. It's a really cool idea.
I had to do
idea.
An interview to Laura and Miss Beetle. I had to do a lemon verbena, and it's a very nice scent. I like it a lot. It's continued to be a favorite.
That's
and
awesome.
They're all in little mason jars, and they have little twine tied around them. They're very country, very Little House on the Prairie looking, and they're real nice. I'm really thrilled with them.
I'm definitely going to look for them and place an order, and I'm going to post pictures when I get them, like a complete nerd. So another thing that I always wondered about, with David Rose being the person who created the score and the music for Little House on the Prairie, was he somebody who was like on set, or do you recall like his like work process? Do you know if he was like somebody who was just always around?
I don't think so. I think he was more in the soundstage in the studio where they do just the recordings of the music. That mm-hmm. you know, I don't think he was really on set.
Yeah.
He probably came to visit, but I don't think he was on set all the time.
It just, there's some episodes that just seem so, you know, completely personalized by him that
well, that's because
just
they go watch the scene and then yeah. they write the music to fit the scene,
mm-hmm.
which is it's always an interesting concept to me. to write a scene and then have this music flow out of your head that fits it, that sets the tone. Mm-hmm. But, you know, composers, they're very good that way because you get different accentuating feelings with your strings or with your horns or with your drums. You know, it creates, it invokes a different feeling. So it always fascinates me how they're able to do that.
Same thing here. And it just seems as though David Rose really, I don't know, he found a great show to work on. You know, it's just seemed like a lot of things really came together for Little House on the Prairie. Do you have a particular favorite show or two that of all the seasons?
Well, I love the pilot. The pilot's one of my absolute favorites. I love Ma's Holiday. I love The Lord is My Shepherd. Let's see, which other ones do I really love? Those three are, of course, tops. Harvest is Friends is good.
They're all great episodes. Like, they're definitely. I'm surprised you're not choosing the episodes that are Carrie-centric.
I think Ma's Holiday was a little Carrie-centric, kind of, sort of. I mean, she got nailed to the roof, and then she eats the rattlesnake, and she puts the food on Mr. Edward's nose, and she hides under the bed.
Oh, that's true. Well, Rachel, I want to thank you so much for taking the time out to speak with me tonight. I really do appreciate it. It's been a real pleasure. Hopefully, you can get me the, when the website is up, I'd love to promote it and do whatever I can to let, all the people at Walnut Grovecast, know about that.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Be careful riding the horses, you know, they can be very dangerous, but, it's just so amazing that, I'm actually this past summer, I was going to have my son go to horse camp. Like, you know, they basically go there 3 times a week and you get riding lessons. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, something just fell through the cracks and we just didn't end up doing it. But I think we might do that maybe this spring. So we'll see. It's I think as a parent, I get a little nervous about it.
But, yeah, and then I'll tell you the same thing I told my daughter when she was going to have her daughter start riding lessons. Just really, really research the trainer and who you're entrusting your child to and get feedback from other parents on what they think. Mm-hmm. And that's the best way to find a really good riding coach.
Well, I mean, you started riding when you were 3?
Yeah, I started riding when I was 3.
So, I mean, it's part of you now. Like, you know, this is something that, although the animal can be slightly unpredictable, I would imagine, but at the same time, I think you have more than enough experience. Probably by the age of 10, you knew what you were doing, you know?
Well, yeah, and it depends on how, you know, I had some good instructors and I had some good hard knocks, you know, but I learned along the way. And of course, now I'm more skilled, having been riding for over 30 years, mm-hmm. Going on 40 years. Right. I didn't say that, did I? I did.
also said your daughter has a daughter.
You get better and you learn some of the tricks. You know, you can read books and stuff like that, and you can learn some of the tricks, and they have clinics, and, you know, you learn how to do things. Like, when a horse takes off with you, they can brace up into the bit. So if you give them a steady pull, they can brace into that steady pull. But if you alternate your hands and give them a seesaw, they can't brace into that. And those are just little tricks you learn along the way that just build your confidence. So if that happens to you again, you know what to do.
You sound like a trainer. You should be like the trainer for the stars.
Yeah.
But no.
Someday I want to ride in William Shatner's horse show. That's what I want to do. Yeah, he has a celebrity horse show. Someday I'm gonna ride in William Shatner's horse show. He may not know it now, but one day it's gonna happen.
Ironically enough, he listens to the show. No, I don't think he does. But
why not? He authenticated Allison on Twitter. That's true. I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, again, thank you so much, and I really do appreciate your time. And if you ever want to come on and talk about anything, you're more than welcome to.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. So I'm over here across the plains to meet his family. I
I was homeless, yeah, I saw and smelled, passed on a prayer.